The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Meyer.
Happy Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Join the conversation 770-5633-770-KMED. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. The Facebook.com/BillMyersShow feed is up here. And if you have a good conspiracy, go ahead and weigh in on that. Of course, the conspiracy right now seems to be that everything is fake at all times. whether it's artificial intelligence, deep fakes being created, whether it is the limited hangout of what we're seeing here in the state of Oregon. What's the limited hangout? Okay. I honestly think that if we were having a true investigation of the Oregon voting system, we'd probably find more illegal aliens on our voter rolls than what they're saying right now. That's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. And I know that the latest here is that of the 300 or so that were found on the Oregon voting rolls, 22 of them were in Jackson and Josephine County. You see, there were 11 aliens on Josephine County's voter rolls and 11 on Jackson County rolls. And this according to local officials. Daily Courier actually has that story this morning. And of the 11 taken off of Jackson County rolls, none voted. This according to Jackson County Clerk Chris Walker. I wonder how many of those 11 were the ones that that I was talking about a little over a year ago. I might just have to talk to Chris about this. Because I got to tell you, when I had that guest about a year and a half ago bring in the several ballots that were sent to foreign nationals at staying at local motels, to her credit, Chris Walker got right on that, man. And she was trying to shove that up the food chain of the various county clerks. They have their own association or professional association of county clerks. I don't know if that's exactly the name of it or not. But trying to raise that issue with various county clerks, it's like, hey, you know, this motor voters thing, we're signing up foreign nationals to vote, and they're receiving ballots, even if they're not there. Now, of course, even the ballot being sent in there is still the possibility of some hinky. But my suspicion, and it is only my suspicion, is that this is kind of like when the CIA has something embarrassing going on, so you admit to a little bit of it. Just a little bit of it, what they call the limited hangout, and then everybody else, oh, okay, all right, well, you're admitting to this, and there's a problem. You're going to fix it then, and then we, the sheeple, can then just go to sleep. Down in Arizona, they're talking about 100,000 nationals, foreign nationals, on their voter rolls. They're trying to get off of that. And Democrats are not real happy about that. 100,000, that's quite a few. Quite a few. Yikes. So, anyway, they're on it, but is there going to be a real fervor? I mean, the only way you can really have this cleaned up is to require everybody to re-register to vote and to be required to have proof of citizenship. Proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. Not just clicking on or ticking a little box on the DMV form, which is saying, oh, yeah, I attest that I am eligible for this, blah, blah, blah. That's all they do right now. See, everything about Oregon's vote by mail is kind of faith-based. That's just it. It's the only system we have right now. But it's why I voted against the vote by mail when it came in there. I didn't think it was a good idea then. I'm thinking, all right, I'm always talking about this. I remember when they were getting this passed. And I thought, okay. My gosh, I remember that my bills and checks get lost in the mail all the time. Why would I want to send my vote through the mail? Okay. And yeah, by the way, I know you police or post office workers are doing a great job. Nothing against that. There's a lot of stuff. There's always a lot of opportunities when you're moving things around physically. I always kind of like the idea that, you showed up and you walked into the precinct and you had the wonderfully friendly people with the precinct book, and they would open it up and they would check your ID. Oh, my gosh. I guess that would be racist now, even though we were doing that only a few decades ago. It wasn't considered all that big of a deal. But anyway, so that I think that even the voting story in Oregon is kind of yet another example of how everything is fake. And the entire system lies to you apparently at all times, which makes it very difficult to try to tease through it all. That's the part that makes it pretty tough. Even for me, it's just like, you know, the most outrageous claims, there's been so much craziness going on over the last few years that, yeah, you can give it some credence at first, right? And yeah, we have to resist that. Anyway, join in at 770-5633. I think that if we were to do a real investigation of the Secretary of State's office, would really investigate it, they'd find out that it was a lot more. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe some of what the Secretary of State investigated was really what local clerks raising some issues because of citizens like Cal Thomas, or Cal Martin, rather, who brought that issue to my attention a year and a half ago or so. I'm sure that had to do more with it. I don't think that the current Secretary of State really wants to know. He's really wanting to know. We say, okay, how many can we go out there? Okay, oh, 300. Okay, well, 300. And so that way Democrats can continue to say, yes, there is voter fraud out there. Yes, there's election fraud, but it's never, never, ever, 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 pinky swear that it's never enough to change or tip any election. To change or tip the elections, we put up big wall boards over the windows so people can't observe the count. Oh, that was in Detroit. Yeah, I know. So anyway, we got a little bit of that going on this morning here, too. What else do we have happening? Oh, scam alert. And I think this part actually is really interesting. Joe County Sheriff's Office ended up putting this out yesterday. Apparently, businesses are getting phone calls from people posing as law enforcement. And these people who are pretending to be sheriff's officers or police officers or whatever it is, they tell the businesses they're working on an investigation, and could you give us a list of their current clients, of your current clients, so all your business people. So you send it to the scammers, apparently, and then when the businesses give the scammer the list, the scammer turns around and then calls the customers and asking for payment. And since you're already a customer of this particular vendor, let's say, a lot of times, I guess some people would pay this. So don't do that. It's pretty clever, because if you're a customer and you know you may be owing money for some service for this business that just gave up all your information, you are more apt to pay. And so Josephine County Sheriffs are saying, just be aware this is going on. Investigators should be providing you with a search warrant or subpoena for such information. There you go. That is the operative phrase, search warrant, subpoena, something like that. And search warrant, by the way, would be perfectly constitutional. In fact, there are so many things in our lives that would work better if we were just actually paying attention to that pesky Constitution. As an example, if we really thought that we had a Fourth Amendment at this point, a Fourth Amendment that truly was protecting your person and your papers and your various accounts and things like that, a business person wouldn't even think of automatically offering up their business information to someone who claims to be a cop on the phone. But I think that we have been so inculcated or conditioned to just thinking that, after all, we have the Department of Homeland Security. Of homeland. It is the homeland, just like the fatherland, you know, that kind of thing, that we're sort of lickspittles and are just automatically, well, yeah, I want to be cooperative. I don't want to look like I'm a criminal, you know, that kind of thing. And Americans have given up a lot of their constitutional birthright. I think we've been conditioned to, rather than saying, warrant for that. Got a warrant for that? Hey, I'd like to cooperate with the police. That'd be great. You know, if you're really legit, got a warrant, got a subpoena, got some paperwork, or just some Joe Schmo trying to get all my stuff from me. All right. Yeah, if we were a little more distrustful of that. Okay, well, that's it. That's it. If somebody calls up and says that they're a police officer, you have to treat that the same way that, someone who's sending you a fake political ad over your phone. Look at it the same way. Right? Maybe that's where we are, huh? And how are you doing this morning? 20 minutes after 6, this is the Bill Meyer Show, KMED 99.3 KBXG. Kevin Starrett joins me here in about 10, 12 minutes or so, and we'll be talking about a trend some gum people are saying, don't ever talk about those attempted assassins, or those assassins don't share their pictures. It only makes more of them. Is that true? I don't know. If I have someone who's a bubble off plum down the street who is going out there and trying to get people signed up for Ukraine and has all sorts of felons and things, I think I would have liked to have known more about that. But we'll see what Kevin has to say about that coming up, too. Ambassador David Friedman he actually was Trump's ambassador to Israel 2017-2021. And he's out with a new book called One Jewish State, One Jewish State. And he actually thinks that the United States should help Israel annex the West Bank and then have a true, pure Jewish state. Now, I don't know if they're talking about an ethno state or whatever it is, because right now Israel has a lot of people who are not Jewish within their borders and sometimes causes some problems, as you well know. And hence, Israel sends out a bunch of bad pagers and walkie-talkies. Yeah. Oh, man, that's what a wild story this week. But we'll talk with the ambassador about that. You know, I'm thinking that would be, you know, an interesting question I'm thinking about posing to the ambassador. What do you think about this one? What would you think about this one, seriously? Ambassador Friedman, of course, would like Israel to be one Jewish state, because he says there's a whole bunch of Christian states and a whole bunch of Muslim states and things like that. Well, you know, I don't know. Why couldn't the United States be a Christian state? I think I'd like that. I would think that life in the United States would probably be better if we were more of a Christian nation and just was going to be honest about it rather than saying, okay, yeah, it was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, but that's okay. You want to commit Santeria, or you want to have your little voodoo village over in Ohio? That's okay, no problem. I mean, what could go wrong there? But you know, if he wants it for Israel, why couldn't we do it for the United States? Anything about that? Is that beyond the pale? 770-5633. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Your water's clear bacteria is to have a professional water lab run an E. coli test. E. coli is famous for making people really sick, but it's also an indicator of other bacteria, protozoa, and viruses. So ask Grants Pass Water Lab to test your water for E. coli. Find locally owned, independent Grants Pass Water Lab online at gpwaterlab.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Jay Austin, and I'm on KMED.
Speaking of Jay Austin, I was looking at the price of gold this morning because they're one of my oldest sponsors. And gold at one point popped to $26.12 earlier this morning. It's currently settling into futures market at about $25.76. And this is a day after the Federal Reserve says, yep, we're going to cut the short-term interest rates 0.5%. That's what they can control. They can't control the long-term interest rates, but they can take care of the short-term money. And so they're going to cut that. Stock market is reportedly going to go nuts this morning, 500 points or so, because they're going, happy days are here again. The federal fentanyl is going into our veins again. And we're going to be able to just borrow and borrow and borrow and speculate and speculate and speculate. And of course, do I look at gold as necessarily that speculation? No, I just look at this as, well, there's two ways to look at this. The Fed was supposed to have done a quarter point cut, a quarter point interest cut. That's what they were supposedly going to do. Then the market was saying, well, we'd really like a 0.5%. We'd like a 0.5%. Because those senior citizens that are getting 5% on a CD right now, they're making way too much money and we have to punish them. No, they don't really say that, but that's essentially what has gone on here with the Federal Reserve's low interest rate plan. And by the way, even the interest rates right now are not high by traditional standards. They're only high over the market heroin standards that we've been experiencing for what about the last 15 to 20 years or so, ever since the Great Recession and beyond, in which, zero interest rate policies, we think money should be free. And people who save money should be punished, and the only people who should make money are those who invest in the stock market. That's essentially, or real estate, right? Real estate or the stock market, those are the only people who are supposed to make money. You shouldn't be able to save money and make anything. That's been kind of where I think the Federal Reserve has been for quite some time. Now, Wall Street loves that. They get the cheap money first, send it out into the economy, and they get first crack at it. You and I get inflation. Well, Mr. Gold is still saying that, inflation that they're claiming is very low is probably going to be going up higher. And I also think it's indicative that the Fed's concerned that we're already in a recession. I think that's the reason why they ended up going with a half point rate cut. That's just my opinion on that. But they're looking at a half point rate cut, and yet we're going into what appears to be a war cycle and a recession, and nobody has any control over the budget. No one's going to reduce spending. Donald Trump is not going to reduce spending if he is elected president. He's not going to take care of the deficit. Kamala certainly will not either. I was saying that's just the way it is. And gold is reflecting this. And so if you're looking to add some of that to your portfolio right now, better to buy it a little bit earlier than maybe a few minutes too late. And talk with my friends at Jay Austin and Company, Gold and Silver Buyers at Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street and 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. Talk to your financial advisor. But and I know a lot of people will tell you to get gold and in a safety deposit box. I don't know about that. Remember the story in which the federal government went through the safety deposit boxes in the Beverly Hills Bank and they ended up seizing people's stuff that was in there? It took a while for people to get their stuff back. Gosh, even a safety deposit box is not necessarily a keep-all. But I don't know. I would just be very careful about that. But Mr. Gold is saying that the dollar is going to be under pressure. And that's just the way that is. But I'm sure we'll see some nice gains in the stock market today as the heroin courses, as the financial heroin ends up going into it. Maybe fentanyl is a better one. It kind of numbs people to reality. Fentanyl numbing people to reality going into the financial situation. Now, I'm sure if you're looking for a mortgage, you'll be happier about that. But even today's current mortgage rates are not that expensive in the historical record. They're only expensive when you've had these real estate bubbles and asset bubbles going on for a number of years, and in which the crap shack on Holly Street that I bought back in 1993. Yeah, the crap shack that I bought on 706 Holly Street in Medford for $51,000. We bought that 1992-1993 is now supposedly worth close to $250,000. Or maybe $225,000, something in there. Some insane amount last time I checked there. And I'm thinking to myself, that's still the crap shack. It's still a crap shack is $250,000. Is it really worth $250,000, or is the dollar worth that much less? I think you know kind of where I'm coming from on that. All right, 770-5633. Speaking of crap shack money, City of Brookings is going to have to pay up $400,000. It's that lawsuit. And they're going to have to pay $400,000 to St. Timothy's Episcopal Church after a years-long legal battle over the church's social service. The city also must allow the church to keep providing social services. Basically, they've been feeding the bums. They've been feeding the bears, and it's been creating all sorts of disorder in Brookings. But the lawsuit says, yep, City of Brookings is going to have to pay $400,000 to St. Timothy's. And earlier they were claiming that it violated the city's zoning laws, what they were doing, services that included meals, showers, internet, and a bunch more. So city's paying $400,000 in legal costs. So the church won that case in the U.S. District Court. That's not good for the city of Brookings. I understand the religious rights issues there, but I also understand that the city of Brookings has been really concerned because essentially the church has been feeding the bears, and the bears have been causing problems in Brookings. It's no different than what we've been speaking about around here. You feed the bears, you feed the homeless bears, and the homeless bears are causing all sorts of problems. And, you know, it kind of sucks to have that church in your neighborhood. Let me just put it that way. That's really what we're getting down to. And I don't know how you feel about that. I know there's one thing about religious rights. Do you have the ability, or do you have the right to cause issues within your community like that? I don't know. But the courts have ruled solidly in favor of the church. So $400,000, City of Brookings already broke, is going to have to come up with some more money. Look for your fees to rise, right, City of Brookings residents? How's your day going, huh? 6:32. Kevin Starrett joins me here in just a moment. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Should we shut up about the people causing mass murders and more? We'll talk about that coming up.
Ready to sip your way into fall bliss?
...and refreshments. Secure your seats with the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad now at OregonCoastScenic.org.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
All right. Actually, hold the phone calls here for just a little bit, unless you wanted to talk with Kevin Starrett, because Kevin Starrett is the chief cook, bottle washer, and I consider him... I just love talking politics with Kevin, just because... He just kind of lays it all out there, but he's with Oregon Firearms Federation, OregonFirearms.org. By the way, anything happening on any of the lawsuits before we dig into some of the latest gun controversy here, Kevin? Welcome back.
Well, yeah, there's stuff happening on, too. I mean, there's the lawsuit against me that's proceeding, but the lawsuit, the state lawsuit against Measure 114, as I think I mentioned last time we spoke, is due to be tried in the appellate court, the Oregon Appeals Court, I think on October 29th.
October 29th, right before the election. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be a pivotal thing because, you know, if the court finds against us and the appeals court is not a conservative pro-gun body, I do not see how a single gun store survives in the state. And an enormous number of people who are just doing what they've been doing for many, many years perfectly lawfully and legally will become criminals. And I think a lot of people will become criminals who don't really know they're going to become criminals, because a lot of people think, oh, well, I don't own a, you know, a high capacity magazine, so I'm okay. Well, if you own almost any conventional shotgun, you are going to become a criminal. And
really?
People are unaware of that.
Yeah, why is that about a conventional shotgun would be illegal? This is under Measure 114, under 114, right?
That's correct. Because what they did is they said you cannot own a magazine, or you cannot leave your house, cannot purchase, sell, or leave your home with a magazine that is capable of holding more than 10 rounds.
Okay.
Well, what shotgun holds more than 10 rounds? Well, any shotgun, or virtually any shotgun, that has a tubular magazine, which is an enormous number of shotguns, all your Remington 870s, your Mossberg 500s, a lot of, you know, trap guns, are capable of holding more than 10 of the mini shells, which are shotgun shells, which are shorter than conventional ones, which were designed, you know, for home defense and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And since they are capable of it, just like most magazines that hold 10 rounds are capable of being modified to hold more than 10 rounds. Now, if you live in a frontier county, if you live in Sherman County, or if you live in Eastern Oregon, there's no sheriff in the world that's ever going to lock you up for having a magazine that could hold more than 10 rounds if you remove the floor plate and put an extension on it.
But you could certainly see that happening. But you could see that happening in Multnomah County, as an example, or any other place that...
Yeah, you could absolutely see it happening in Multnomah County and other counties and, you know, up and down the valley. Because, let's face it, you know, the power structure in Oregon hates people who own firearms and are looking for any way to destroy them. And, of course, here's the problem. And I don't know really what you do about this. If the court finds in our favor, which I consider not terribly likely, but I've been wrong so far, thankfully, there's nothing that stops the legislature from coming. Say rule Measure 114 in whole or in part to be unconstitutional. There's nothing to stop Prezansky and the other leftists who control the legislature from just creating a brand new law that does exactly the same thing.
Well, kind of like what they did with the homelessness encampment rules there that the Boise decision put into place, right? Then Oregon, state of Oregon, essentially said, yeah, this is going to be our law now. And then even though the Supreme Court got rid of that, we're still saddled with a lot of those regulations. Same kind of thing, right? They just do.
Sure.
And even
in the past, when Oregonians passed a ballot measure that said marriage is between a man and a woman, the legislature came back and just reverse that. Oregonians said, we don't want to give driver's license to illegal aliens, which has become quite interesting now because, as we know, they're voting. And the legislature just came back and reversed that. Now, if the courts come along and say, look, Measure 114, or parts of it are unconstitutional, there's nothing that stops the legislature from writing the same law, knowing it's unconstitutional, because this happens all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, a bill will be introduced. The lawyers from the legislature will say, you know, we got a problem with the Constitution. It doesn't matter to them because it is not their problem.
The problem is then for people like you and me and everybody else listening, right, who is a Second Amendment aficionado, right, who then has to dig deep into their pockets, hire attorneys, and then fight the state attorneys that we also have to pay for, right?
Yeah, we have to pay for ours. We have to pay for theirs. And imagine a world where we actually won, right? Okay, that's difficult to imagine. But if you imagine a world where we actually won and damages were then paid to, you know, like say we won and got lawyer's fees. Guess who pays for that?
Taxpayers.
Well, we do.
Yeah. You know? So heads the state wins, tails the regular people lose. Okay. You know, and sometimes I start to understand the anarchists more than I would care to say.
Well, you know, when you think about it, we kind of are there. I mean, it's not total anarchy because we don't have the opportunity to do whatever we want.
Well, no, the thing is, what we have, though, is an anarchist tyranny. Yeah, anarcho-tyranny, right, in which,
exactly.
The state is able to do whatever it wishes to do, and then we are not, that kind of thing.
The
right?
state can do whatever it wants to do. The courts can do whatever they want to do. And we're seeing this more and more. I mean, we certainly saw it in our federal case against 114, where the Supreme Court has said, here's how these cases must be decided in the future. It said, if you're dealing with a Second Amendment issue, here are the rules. And the judge in our case, as in many cases across the country, simply said, I'm ignoring you. I'm going to do what I want, because there's really no enforcement mechanism. If a judge in Portland, you know, Karen Emmergott says, well, I've chosen to completely ignore the guidelines set up by the Supreme Court, what happens? Well, the Supreme Court doesn't send, you know, their Supreme Court police to arrest Karen Emmergott.
That's right.
She continues to do what she wants. And in many cases, it's been so blatant, you know, where the court has said, okay, here are the rules. They're not that complicated. And lower courts, you know, even like appeals courts at circuit courts have said, you know what, we just decided that doesn't interest us. We're going to do what we want. So there is a certain level of judicial anarchy going on here as well. And who loses? You know, patriots, Americans, voters, we're the ones who lose because there's no enforcement body anymore that is trustworthy.
And I guess that's also a problem then when you have Republicans who are kind of the rule followers of the world as it is. They'll see a court precedent come down. Well, I better follow what the court says, even though I don't really like it. Meanwhile, we have the Antifa types and the Democratic Party, but that's backing a lot of this. It says, oh, no, we'll just ignore what the court says, or we'll just claim that the court is illegitimate, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of a tough spot to be in, right?
Well, I mean, you see that across the board where the people who we think represent us say, well, you know, I mean, I've heard Cliff Benz say this when they were talking about impeaching Mayorkas, mm-hmm. and he voted against that. So, well, you know, we're Republicans. We just don't behave that way. Okay, that's fine, except the other side doesn't believe that. You know, the other side says, okay, we're going to kick you in the teeth. We're going to do whatever we want. And our side continues to say, well, you know, that's not polite. That's not Christian. That's not, we have to set a different tone.
Oh, yeah. In other words, play like the Washington Generals against the Harlem Globetrotters and going on to lose gracefully and say, hey, I stood for my principles, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, we did the right thing. Look at us. You know, we're so pure. Well, I'm sorry. While you're pure, the people of Oregon are losing everything constantly. I mean, really, not just losing things financially, you know, with the policies that put your property at risk, but people are losing their freedom and people are at risk of things getting far worse because the people who we believe or thought we were electing to protect our values are really wholly owned subsidiaries of the Democrats in control.
And generally speaking, the types that you hear about, we have to reach across the aisle, or I'm willing to reach across the aisle. You've heard that time and time again, and I'm thinking, okay, Democrats are laughing at you as you're reaching across the aisle. If you're not trying to break that system or break up their passing of legislation, then you're not really accomplishing much as a state legislator. That's just the the way it goes, unfortunately. You're not in other words, you're not going to get your bills passed, all right? That's the first thing you got to figure out if you're a Republican. Your bills will not pass, right? We know that. That's not going to happen, right? Is that the fair way of looking at the state legislature?
Exactly. That's exactly. And what we see is, I mean, I see that, because, of course, I get the emails, the mass emails from a lot of legislators, and I see this from Kevin Mannix. Now, Kevin Mannix, of course, years ago was a Democrat, became a Republican. He's kind of a gadfly, was out of the legislature for a long time, was one of the principal architects of the major anti-gun bill in 1999. I am this constitutional conservative guy, which he is not. And his emails are all about, oh, look at how much I'm accomplishing because I'm reaching across the aisle, which means I'm doing the bidding of the Democrats. We see the exact same thing with people like Chavez de Remer, who's one of the two theoretically Republican congresspersons from Oregon, whose every communication is, look at me, I'm bipartisan. Well, when you're bipartisan in this environment, you are just doing what the other side wants, and then taking when the other side has a bill that you help pass, then you take credit for it. Meanwhile, everything's slipping away, and our people, I mean, there are Republican legislators who are standing up in Congress, but they are in the distinct minority. And in the Oregon legislature, Oregon legislators who stood up have been basically thrown out because they can't run again. And then you have forces within the caucuses there that do everything in their power to make sure that anybody who is a true constitutional conservative doesn't get into office. I mean, look at what the Iversons did to Noah Robinson.
Oh, I know.
And that was an anomaly because he was able to win because the local party got behind him and the truth got out. But you have players who are the kingmakers in Oregon Republican politics who will spend Republican contributors' money to destroy or attempt to destroy real conservative candidates like Noah or Diane Lithicum. And they did the same thing years ago with Nicole DeGraff, and we got Charlie Conrad, who is now actively working for the Democrats, you know, who helped them pass child sexual mutilation and gun control, as did Kevin Mannix. And now that he's been removed, he was replaced in the primary by a real Republican. Now he's out there on the trail, you know, doing speaking engagements for the Democrats. Thank you, Brian and Vicki Iverson.
Okay. By the way, do you have your Jingle Jeff sweatshirt yet, or your sweater?
It hasn't arrived. Jingle Jeff shirt. None of my Christine Drazen coffee mugs have gotten here either.
Okay. Yeah. I'm always getting hit up for those things. Like, you know, buy the swag, you know, right now. I would just really kind of prefer that you not vote for the Democratic bills, and then I'd feel a lot better. Maybe I'd buy your mug. if you start doing that. Listen, if I buy your swag, would you actually start voting like a constitutional conservative Republican? Then I'll be fine with you. You know, now other people will say, Kevin, when it comes to these issues that you and I have had with many Republican legislators, is that, hey, this is the reality of where it is, and with Republican work that we have made some of the Democrat bills less bad. And there seems to be some evidence of that. So should we give them a kind of a break on some of that?
No, I don't want to give them a break on anything because
there are
a lot of instances where, for example, you know, we now have this lawsuit against 2005, which makes it a crime to build your own firearm.
That's right.
The Republicans will all say, hey, look, what are you complaining about? We all voted against that. When it made no difference, right? They knew it was going to pass, and the way to stop it was not to vote against it, but was to block it by a walkout, which would have come at no cost to them. So, you know, I got an email recently from a guy who has a political action committee for motorcycle riders, and he was saying, hey, you know, can you help me with like the vote counts on some of these people? I said, look, the vote counts are immaterial. There are other factors at play here. If you absolutely know that something is going to pass, voting against it doesn't prove anything. And as a matter of fact, if you go back in the records, way back when Oregon Firearms started in 1999, Kevin Mannix had a bill to ban private sales of guns.
Yep.
Right?
I remember that. Yep.
Okay. So if you go look at the history online of that bill, so this is 1999, House Bill 2535. If you go back and look at the actual vote count as it made its way through the process, you will see that Kate Brown, who was the Senate, I think, majority leader at the time, voted against the bill. You say, well, wait a minute. Kate Brown's anti-gun. Why would she vote against an anti-gun bill? Well, because if you and you won't see this in the history of the bill because it isn't there. It was actually a whole complicated series of things where she voted for the bill. She lost. So she changed her vote so that she could be on the winning side, so she could immediately call for reconsideration and in hopes of changing some minds and getting the bill passed. But because that motion failed, her last act was to vote against the bill. But if you're a person who's just getting involved in the issue or doing some research and you weren't there, you'd never know what actually happened. So the actual vote counts are only a tiny part of the story. And I think even Goodwin, Christine Goodwin, who mercifully has been removed from the political scene at this point, I think she mentioned that. It may have been on your show or in some communication where she even said, hey, you know, the votes are really not the whole story, because if you absolutely know which way a bill is going, and look, we see this all the time where legislators will be on the floor and there's a big board down in Salem that has the legislators' names and then a light next to them that shows when they vote and if they vote for or against the bill. And it's not uncommon to see legislators sitting there waiting to vote, and they look up at that board and they wait to see, for example, they have a bill that they don't want to be responsible for in their district. They don't want to have voted for this bill. They will wait until they see that it's just reached enough votes to pass, then they'll vote against it. And sometimes they'll even change their vote afterwards. This happens, and this creates all kinds of confusion for people who are desperately trying to follow the process and don't understand that it's all a charade and it's all a game, and the loser is always you.
You know, it's interesting, and this sounds so confusing, but I guess it's confusing to by design, apparently, from the sounds of it, the way that the votes are structured, the way they do this. So you can't really hold anybody truly accountable, right?
A few months ago, there was a guy who's running for office who was tweeting about something that he saw go on in the legislature. And it was one of these things where a bunch of people changed their votes, then people came back on the floor and the vote changed. And he completely confused what was going on, because it is really it is designed to be confusing. Uh-huh. And if you can sit there and say, I'm not committing to a bill until I've made sure it passes, and then I can vote against it and go back into my district. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, for 25 years, we've always put out candidate ratings and candidate surveys and really come to the understanding. We haven't done it this year. Come to the understanding that a candidate survey is largely meaningless. If you have people who are in office, you can kind of come to a conclusion about where they're at based on how they behaved, you know, so they're what they tell you in a survey is really not really very important. If they haven't been in office and they're running for the first time or they're not incumbents, well, that could just be lying, you know, and it happens all the time. And look, I had a situation where we endorsed the guy who's running for Senate from Eastern Oregon, Todd Nash, right? And we endorsed him this last time out based on he hadn't served in the legislature as a county commissioner. Had not served in the legislature before. His campaign manager, who I probably should have known was not trustworthy, asked me to talk to him, and I did, and he said all the right things. And I mean, we had a long conversation, and one of the things we talked about was the fraudulent fake organization that the Iversons set up with Reagan Canope, which consists of Reagan Canope and Brian Iverson, which they created this fake gun organization so they could endorse candidates. And during our conversation, you know, I told him about it. He was aware of them, and he was like, okay, yeah, I don't want anything to do with those guys. And like the following day had their logo up on his website saying, look, I got endorsed by Oregon Gun Rights, an organization of two people that only existed as a website until after we called them out. And then they formed a PAC, which you can go now and see still has exactly one donation in it from Reagan Canope. So of course we rescinded the endorsement. And that's the problem, is that if you have people who've served, like Dennis Lithicum and Art Robinson and all those people, and even people who've done weird stuff like Brian Boquist, you have an actual record. But now on the House side, where we know that they're basically greasing the skids for everything the Democrats want, because the Democrats are completely in control and everything they want will pass, the Republicans can comfortably say, hey, look at me, I voted no, when their no vote was utterly and completely meaningless.
Wow. Okay. So that's just where we find ourselves at the moment here. Kevin Starr at Oregon Firearms Federation talking a bit of politics this morning, and we didn't even get to the main topic. I'll do that here. I guess we'll give short shrift to the main topic, but I always enjoy this. Let me go. Hi there, caller. Do you want to talk to Kevin about something?
I do.
Okay. Yes. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Ron Grants Pass.
Yeah, Ron, go ahead. Fire away.
I want to suggest that a lot of law firms who are pro-gun get together and file in the place of the people who are voters a lawsuit that forces the approval and continued use of the oath of office. That's the only way that we have for forcing these people. Because the
who's going to enforce that?
That's going to be something that the lawyers have to figure
no,
out.
No, I'm asking you. No, Ron, you bring this up a lot. Kevin, you know, about I love the idea of people following the oath of office, but who's going to enforce it?
I put that on Kevin. Kevin, what do you think?
Bill, do you remember back in the prehistoric days when Oregon Citizens Alliance was around?
Yes, I do. OCA, Lon Mabon, right? Right.
Lon Mabon, the head of Oregon Citizens Alliance, who was vilified as Hitler and a Nazi and the most evil. And everything he told us was going to happen has happened. He was 100% right. All right. He goes into court. I don't remember what there was lawfare against him. So he's in court. And the judge in the case was a guy who had not taken an oath of office. And I was there. I was watching this. Lon said, hey, look, you didn't take an oath of office. You're not really authorized to be doing this. I'm not going to participate in this process. And the sheriffs came along and put him in handcuffs and dragged him to a jail cell where he sat in a freezing jail cell for like a month or something. So you can file all the lawsuits you want. But as you pointed out, there is no enforcement mechanism. It's like we got to hold judges accountable. We got to hold politicians accountable. But when the entire system has been locked down and compromised, where the judges are compromised, the law enforcement. I mean, really, at this point, if you had crooked local cops, would you call the FBI? You know what I mean?
That's a good point. But, you know, so in other words, that was one example there, Ron, of even relying on the oath of office to disqualify someone in the So I didn't realize that. So I forgot about this. Lon Mabon got thrown in jail for a month over that? Really?
Yeah, he was sitting in jail. And I remember I was hearing from his wife, and they said he was freezing. Hilariously, at the time, the sheriff, I'm trying to remember if the sheriff was Dan Noley or who it was, but what happened to Lon was illegal, right?
Right.
And when Noley, I think it was Noley, let me back, I'm not sure. So whoever the sheriff at the time was questioned and said, how is this going on? Your sheriffs lock somebody up for doing something they're entitled to do. And his response was, we have to have a separation of powers.
Huh?
Like, wait a minute. This is like talking to Kamala Harris. You know, it's like, hey, sheriff, why are you doing illegal stuff? Well, you know, I was born in a middle-class neighborhood of hardworking construction workers. You know,
And by the way, thank you for the call, Ron. But that's a really nice idea to have the oath of office count. But there's a lot of other stuff that would have to be operating too, which aren't operating. Speaking of Ms. Harris, though, Mrs. Harris, I think this is just wonderful because she's not a radical. In fact, this soundbite indicates how not a radical she is. Okay,
responsible behaviors among everybody in the community. And just because you legally possess a gun in the sanctity of your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible and safe in the way you conduct your affairs.
Yeah, yeah, that was when she was working on the safe storage thing in San Francisco and talking about, hey, you know, just because you're in your locked home doesn't mean that we shouldn't be coming in and taking a look at things, Kevin. That's the reality. That's where we are right now.
Communist. I mean, there's no question the woman's an out-communist. I've gotten some funny emails from people who claim to be, hey, you know, I'm a conservative gun owner, but Donald Trump is a Nazi and he only does stuff for himself. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, Harris is made no secret of the fact of where she stands, who the people are behind her. The whole machine that put her in place is just like Trump is a threat to democracy. There is nothing.
So Trump is a threat to democracy. He's supposedly the threat, but he's the one that's getting shot at. Wait a minute.
Well, but it's his fault, you see, because of the violent rhetoric on his part. This is just amazing. And, you know, there's still people who aren't getting it. You know, it's like, and people, there's things that people never get. Like your caller, I'm sure he really means well, but there's always like, hey, you guys got to hire lawyers, or the lawyers got to do it for free to go throw these judges in jail. Okay, well, who's going to judge those people? Oh, yeah, judges, you know, the same judges.
That were appointed mostly by the Democratic governor, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm, okay. Yeah, what could go wrong? Kevin, before we take off, though, I've noticed that there are gun groups and a lot of gun groups that I actually support a lot. And I think, you know, you've been involved with them, too. You know, Gun Owners of America. They're out there actually calling for people to stop sharing the names and photographs of either the attempted assassins of President Trump or mass killers, shooters, things like that. And they say you don't want to make superstars out of absolute murderers. And I don't know. I kind of like the idea of exposing people who have been crazy and making sure that people know about crazy communism. But maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
I understand the motivation of not wanting to make people like this famous with the belief that even when they die, they feel like now my name is known. Mm-hmm. And we want to prevent that. But look, here's the reality. It's never going to happen. First of all, the vultures in the media, even if you got an agreement that this is a bad idea, the vultures in the media are never going to obey that. You know, the people from MSNBC and CNN, they will never tell the truth about anything, but they're going to put that out there. Second of all, in the world that we live in now, where everyone's got a video camera with them and everyone has a Twitter account, the only things that are still secret in this world are the information that our Congress is trying to get from the Secret Service and the FBI. Those are the only secrets left, because at some point, somebody takes a shot, it shoots up a school or takes a shot at the president. There is going to be an army of FBI agents swarming into that person's house, and the next door neighbor is going to video it, and the questions are going to be asked. It's going to be out there. So it is, the toothpaste is out of the tube on that.
Okay.
It's never going to happen. So I don't want to turn people into heroes who are evil either, but the fact is it's probably not something we should bother spending our time on, because it is not going to happen.
Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I think that's a sensible way of looking at that, as always. Please support the group, OregonFirearms.org. October, late October, is going to be a big one, Measure 114. We're going to be all over that and keeping an eye on that, because a lot of people don't realize that much of what they're doing and already have in their possession could become very illegal, whether they realize it or not. We'll keep up on this, Kevin. Thanks so much for having joined the show, all right? Be well.
Thank you, Bill.
3 minutes after 7, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.
September usually means getting back to a routine. One thing you